Anjali did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across West Midlands as you listen. This is their story. In one of England's most disadvantaged constituencies, mental health nursing posts remain unfilled while qualified candidates are turned away from training programmes that could address the shortage. The infrastructure exists, the people exist, but the connection between them has been severed by decisions made in Westminster about what the government can and cannot afford.
I grew up watching my mum dispense medications at the pharmacy in Small Heath, always telling me I could do more in healthcare if I wanted to. She'd see the prescriptions coming through for antidepressants and anxiety medications, the repeat customers who looked like they needed someone to talk to as much as they needed the pills. That planted something in me early on. When I finished my nursing degree at Birmingham City University in 2019, I thought I'd go straight into general nursing first, get my feet under me. Then the pandemic hit. I spent 2 years as a healthcare assistant watching wards stretch beyond breaking point, seeing how understaffing meant patients got the bare minimum of care when they needed so much more. But it was my brother that really opened my eyes. He was struggling with his mental health, couldn't get an appointment with anyone for months. When he finally did, it was 15 minutes with someone who looked as exhausted as he felt. I knew then what I wanted to specialise in. In early 2022, I applied for a mental health nursing training place with Health Education England West Midlands. I scored well on every assessment. My interview went brilliantly. The panel seemed impressed with my experience, my motivation, everything. Then came the phone call. "Miss Patel, we're pleased to tell you that you've met all our criteria," the admissions coordinator said. "Unfortunately, we've had to cap our intake numbers this year due to Treasury spending constraints on our training budget. We simply don't have the places available." It sounded reasonable at the time. Budgets are tight everywhere, I thought. I try again next year. I applied again in 2023, this time with Birmingham and Solihull Mental Health NHS Foundation Trust's Direct Entry Programme. Different organisation, same result. The workforce planning manager was apologetic but firm. "There is no funding for additional training places this cycle. We'd love to take you on, but our hands are tied." I wasn't giving up. I contacted NHS England directly, thinking maybe there was another route in. The workforce planning officer I spoke to explained it in more detail. "Health Education England's allocation has been frozen despite rising vacancy rates across mental health services. It's frustrating for all of us, but the Treasury sets these limits." That's when I started to get angry. Not at the people I'd spoken to, they were just doing their jobs, but at the whole system that seemed designed to keep willing people out of work that desperately needed doing. One afternoon, feeling completely fed up, I decided to visit the old nurse training centre at City Hospital. I'd done some of my placements there during my degree. I wanted to see what had happened to it. What I found didn't make sense with anything I'd been told. The building was still there, still maintained. A security guard let me look around after I explained what I was trying to do. Floor after floor of simulation labs, classrooms, equipment still wrapped in protective covers. Everything you'd need to train dozens of mental health nurses, just sitting there unused. "Shame, isn't it?" the security guard said as we walked past a fully equipped mock ward. "They had to mothball all these facilities because there's no money for training programs. We get people coming by asking about courses all the time. I have to tell them the same thing you were told." I stood in that empty training ward, looking at beds that could have taught me how to care for mental health patients, at equipment that could have prepared me for the job I wanted to do. And something clicked. The facilities existed. The patients who needed care existed. I existed, ready to be trained. So what exactly was it that there was no money for? Walking home through Edgbaston, I started paying attention to conversations in ways I hadn't before. At the corner shop, I got talking to Priya, who'd moved from Kerala and was working at a care home, despite being a qualified psychiatric nurse back in India. "I'd love to work in the NHS mental health units," she said, "but I can't get onto the adaptation training. They keep saying there's no funding for the programme." Two doors down from my flat, I met James, a mental health nurse from Ghana working night shifts at a private care facility. Same story. Over the road, Sarah from the Philippines, qualified in psychiatric nursing, stacking shelves at Tesco because she couldn't access the bridging course that would let her transfer her skills to the NHS. Four qualified mental health professionals within a five-minute walk of my house, all wanting to work in NHS mental health services. All blocked by the same excuse. All working in jobs that didn't use their skills while mental health wards stayed understaffed. I started to understand something I'd never questioned before. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. The training center existed. The simulation equipment existed. The teaching staff existed, many of them forced into early retirement when programs got cancelled. The students existed, people like me and my neighbours who wanted nothing more than to fill those vacant posts I kept reading about in the news, but somehow when all these real things came together, we were told the only thing missing was the thing that isn't even real until the government creates it. The money. The excuse was not a fact, it was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here, still watching, still ready to train when they decide that connecting qualified people to needed work is worth creating the pounds to make it happen. Because I know now this isn't just my story. It's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare.
What Anjali experienced has a name, impossible expectations. This technique demands guarantees of perfection before committing any resources, standards never applied to spending the government favours. Impossible expectations work like demanding that a new restaurant prevent every possible case of food poisoning before serving its first customer. Reasonable people know that learning involves some trial and error, that improvement comes through practice, not paralysis. But when it comes to public investment, suddenly every pound must deliver flawless results or the program gets cancelled. In Anjali's story, officials demanded certainty that every training pound would create a mental health nurse who stayed in the NHS for decades, never made mistakes, never needed additional support. Meanwhile, billions flowed to bank bailouts with no such guarantees, tax cuts delivered to people who might spend them abroad, procurement contracts awarded to companies with track records of failure. The austerity objection in healthcare claims, the NHS is a bottomless pit, we cannot keep throwing money at it. No service is bottomless, NHS costs are measurable. The UK spends less per capita on health than France, Germany or the Netherlands. Bottomless pit sets an impossible standard where no amount of evidence of need is ever sufficient. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources. People, skills, materials, time. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Birmingham Edgbaston ranks 110 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, placing it in deprivation decile 3. The constituency has 2,375 registered charities, according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £52.6 million, as recorded in 360, giving grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics, produced by Blocked Britain.